Stotra Sattva Sri Srimad. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anatta Kota Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Choice Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Vachalane. Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschalchi Deve Satane. Hare Krishna. So this morning we're reading from 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15, text number 16 and 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Word meanings for text number 16. Narayane in the Supreme Lord Narayana, Toriya Akye, known as the fourth beyond the three modes of material nature. Bhagavat, full of all opulences. Sabda Sabdite, known by the word Mana, the mind, Mai, in me. Adahat, placing yogi, the yogi, mat dharma, being endowed with my nature, visitam, the mystic opulence called visita, yat may obtain. Narayane Toriyakye, Bhagavat Chabda Sabdite. Mano maya dadad yogi, madharma visitam ihat, narayane toriyakye, bhagavat chabda sabdite, mano maya dadad yogi, madharma visitam iyat, narayane tariyakye, bhagavach chabda sabdite, mano maya dadat yogi, madharma visitam iyat.
Yogi, Mano Maya Dadad Yogi,
Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The yogi who places his mind in my form of Narayana, known as the fourth factor, full of all opulences, becomes endowed with my nature and thus obtains the mystic perfection called Vasita. Purport in Bhagavad Gita 7.13, Lord Krishna says, Tribir gunamayir bhavayar egbi sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabijanati mayam ebhya param avyayam. Deluded by the three modes of nature, by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Thus the Lord is called Turiya, or the fourth factor beyond the three modes of nature. According to Srila Viragava Acharya, Turiya also indicates that the Lord is beyond the three ordinary phases of consciousness, namely wakefulness, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. Bhagavachabda Sabdite indicates that the Lord is known as Bhagavan, or the possessor of unlimited opulences, principally beauty, fame, wealth, knowledge, renunciation, and intelligence. In conclusion, one can obtain the mystic opulence, vasita, or freedom from the modes of nature by meditating upon the Lord as Turiya, the fourth factor, beyond those modes. Everything depends upon the factor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So text 17, we can just read together, and it's a short purport. Nirgune bhamani mai darayan visidam mana paramananda apnoti yatra kamo visityate. Translation, one who fixes his pure mind on me in my manifestation as the impersonal Brahman obtains the greatest happiness, wherein all his desires are completely fulfilled. Purport. Paramananda, or the greatest happiness, herein indicates the greatest material happiness, since it is clearly stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that a devotee has no personal desire or kama. One who has personal desire is certainly within the material world, and on the material platform, the greatest happiness is kamavasitya siddhi, or the perfection of completely obtaining anything that one desires. Om ajnana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. So we're continuing our study of the mystic opulences, eight primary and 10 secondary opulences, and today, freedom from the modes of nature and obtaining the greatest happiness with all one's desires completely fulfilled. That's a pretty big benediction. Freedom from the modes of material nature. I think it's explained elsewhere that that means that that there's no impediment presented to you by the three modes of material nature in your attempt to enjoy in this material world. And the combination of the two, that you can be free from the modes of nature, the impediments presented by the modes of material nature, and fulfill all your desires, whatever desire you have, that's the big deal. I mean, who wouldn't want that? No impact. Material life means that there are impediments to our attempts to enjoy. That's what material life means. And it's not just us. Let's take a look at Indra, Ravana, and Hiranyakasipu. Indra, because he's on the pious side, and then the other side, the demonic side, Ravana, Hiranyakasipu. Such powerful persons. But let's list them. What are the impediments to Indra's enjoyment? It's not like Indra, because he's the king of heaven, just can do anything he wants, is it? For enjoyment. What are some of the things that impede Indra's attempts to fulfill all his desires here? Can anybody say? What did you say? His wife, you said? Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
So he tried to turn him against...
Well, that was Krishna, right? I mean, Krishna directly wanted to take something that he wanted to keep, and so...
Was, well, yeah. he was being... don't let him take that.
Oh, it's Sachi, the consul, she was telling him. So, I mean, that's common to everybody, right?
Okay.
But, he has some... Dharma! Dharma is a big impediment to Indra's attempts to enjoy, because so many times he wants to do things that are adharma, and he gets himself in trouble. He even has to leave the heavenly planets. He also is impeded by the asuras always are anxious to take over the kingdom of heaven. They're always being attacked in the heavenly planets. I mean, you think if you're in the heavenly planets that at least you could enjoy in an unimpeded way, but you can't. There's so many impediments that arise. Dharma, in the case of him always wanting to, you know, do different activities. The asura is always trying to attack the heavenly kingdom. So this is in the material world. Swarga Loka, where Indra is the king, is in the material world. So it's subject to what? It's subject to the three modes of material nature. And the three modes of material nature are constantly putting impediments in our way to enjoy or even live. The three modes of material nature are responsible for impeding even big, powerful asuras like Ravana or Hiranyakasipu. What was the big impediment that Hiranyakasipu wanted after 10,000 years of penances and austerities, his body being eaten away, you know, by ants, covered by an anthill? What was he seeking when he came out?
Immortality,
right. Because death, which is a product of the three modes of material nature, was impeding him, and he knew that. So he spent 10,000 years meditating just to try to overcome death. Was he able to do it? He was pretty clever. He put up a lot of arguments, right? Not in day or night. What were some of the other things? Inside or outside? Man or beast?
Land, sea, or air?
I think we got that one, day or night.
No weapons.
Yeah, all these things he saw, he understood, these are impediments to my enjoyment. Even not just his enjoyment, but let's take Brahma, Lord Brahma, the creator. Vaisheshikabhu was saying the other day that it's like when you go to sleep at night and you wake up the next day, it's like, you're born again or something. What was he saying? You're a different person when you wake up. Think of Lord Brahma and his service. Every day he had to create. And if we read his prayers for creative energy, he says that he was praying to the Lord, begging, how can I do this? You know, I don't know how to do this. And it's every day of Lord Brahma's life, it's like that. You know, he has to create again every day. So even in doing his service, there are impediments. And Ravana, he was also impeded by trying to transgress Dharma. And so therefore, he was cursed. He was subject to curses, even though he was so powerful. He couldn't overcome those curses. So this is what material life is about. And these, particularly these two mystic cities that we're talking about here today, freedom from the modes of nature and the ability to achieve happiness, the greatest happiness, whatever one desires, look very attractive when one understands or thinks that they can counter these impediments in material life and one can enjoy. But it's not possible. It's not possible. Indeed, it's foolish in a sense. It's very foolish because people seek these mystic cities, mystic perfections for sort of silly things, really, when we think about material desires. Prabhupada tells a story about a man. He was a boatman. And sometimes in India, at least I don't know currently, but in the past, a boatman, what they would do is, and it was done here too, like if you, even in this history here, the Erie Canal and other canals, you know how they transported stuff along those canals? They would take some horses or something on the side and they would pull it, you know, and it would, the barge would float down the canal. So in India, they had these men. They would be carrying the rope, walking along the bank, pulling the cargo as it floated up the river. So Prabhupada tells a story of such a man who was doing that. And he had some daydream. He had some wish that he would become wealthy. And he had a plan what to do with his wealth when he got it, too. His plan was is that he would line the banks of the river with pillows so that when he was pulling the barge and walking, he wouldn't be stepping on the rocks and the sticks and everything, but he'd be stepping on pillows. I mean, is that what you become wealthy for? So you can put pillows along and still maintain the labor that you're working so hard? No. So that story illustrates the idea of material desires. Actually, material desires are like that. We try to eliminate the miseries of this world, the impediments of this world, and we think that that is happiness. We think that that's happiness. But it's not happiness. Happiness is something else. That may be relief from some types of sufferings or further impediments in this world, but it's not positive happiness. And so it seems foolish for this boatman to do that, but in essence, even great people, like very highly placed people among the Suras and the Asuras, Indra, Ravana, Hiranyakasipu, they are asking for the same thing. I mean, does it describe anywhere in the Bhagavatam that Hiranyakasipu also asked for, like, other benedictions rather than just plain or immortality, that his senses would remain strong? Because that's another impediment, isn't it? And we have these bodies, and when we're young, our senses are strong, and we can enjoy. When we get old, we think we can do the same thing, but the senses don't work as well. And so the pleasure, or so-called pleasure, is not there. Did he ask for, I think he did ask for, like, full strength of mind and power of the senses. And if he didn't, obviously he should have, because this body is like that. And so we shouldn't, of course, one of the major lessons from Anukasipu is you can't outsmart Krishna and the three modes of material nature in particular and achieve happiness in this world. And so all of our attempts can be boiled down to foolish endeavors in this regard. Better we spend some time. I mean, to get these mystic cities described here today in the first verse, text number 16, one has to meditate and keep his mind fixed on the form of Narayan. Meditation is difficult in this age. And it's difficult, quite honestly, at least I speak for myself, it's difficult even after, you know, 45 years of trying to practice meditating on Hare Krishna mantra, it's difficult to keep the mind fixed. What to speak of a formless, impersonal understanding. It's hard to meditate. And even teachers that come from India, they teach meditation and they say, well, meditate for, they give just minutes. Meditate 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day. But that's not the type of meditation that's talked about in achieving all these mystic cities in this chapter of the 11th canto. Meditation meaning going away from society at large, not being concerned, and spending considerable amounts of time, years, decades, 10,000 years here on Yagasipu meditated. So meditation is not easy, and if you're going to go to all that trouble to overcome, to attempt to overcome the three modes of material nature, why not utilize that time and effort to achieve something permanent? You see, to perceive something that you won't have to give up. This is one of the things about the heavenly planets that always struck me, is that they're enjoying like anything, seemingly unimpeded. But anytime there's like a loud screeching sound or something like that, now it's ending. It's over. Because they're expecting it. It's like something hanging over your head, like a shoe. You're waiting for the shoe to drop and hit you on the head. And your whole life is placed in that context. It's not permanent. So better we use our meditation powers and abilities for something that's going to be useful. Krishna describes this in Bhagavad Gita. Daivihyesha gunamayi mamamaya dharatyaya. So we've been talking about the first part of that verse. Daivihyesha gunamayi mamamaya dharatyaya. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. So that's what all these mystic cities are about, trying to overcome the three modes of material nature. And it's very difficult. And it can be achieved after long, dedicated practice. But ultimately, it's temporary. These aren't permanent gains. And so then we have the second half of the verse. Mam eva ye papajyante mayamidam tarantite. But those who surrender to me can easily cross beyond it. So Devotional service to Krishna is easier than these types of meditation to achieve mystic siddhis, and it's permanent, permanent gain. Whatever advancement, and this applies to us, and I think we shouldn't just think it's philosophy, but we should grasp it in our lives, because many of us, particularly sitting here in the room today, have decades. I mean, if we added up, you know, the decades of everybody here, how many centuries it would come up to. But we've put in a lot, and we've made significant advancement in our life. I mean, not that we're advanced, but at least we're not animals anymore. And so you never lose that. You never lose that. That's a big deal. Whatever advancement that we make, it's permanent in our bank account. It's eternal. We never lose it. So why not invest in that? Why not invest in that kind of activity? And by doing so, we can easily lead a life that's free from all these impediments. We can lead a life that's free from all these impediments, but those who surrender to me can easily cross beyond it. So, what are some examples of what it means can easily cross beyond by performing devotional service? First of all, we should say that bhakti is not part of the three modes of material nature. So when we take to the path of bhakti, we're automatically doing things which are outside this sort of corrupt, impediment-ridden material nature. We're outside of that. Prabhupada gives the example. It may not seem like we're outside of it, but Prabhupada gives the example about when a drowning man, he's in the water, he's drowning, when he's pulled on the boat, for a while, he's safe, he's already saved. But for a while, he'll still feel like he's in the water, and he'll be tossing and turning and still think like that. We may be like that. You know, we are pulled fresh from the material ocean that's comprised of the three modes of nature. And we're on the boat, but we still think we're in the water. And so sometimes the activities we do, we think are like the activities that took place in the water, but they're not. I was just hearing today a description from Bhanu Swami, our god brother. He was making this point that the activities of devotional service, bhakti, they may look like the activities of even the mode of goodness, but they're not. They're a different thing. They're transcendental to the modes of material nature. Even things like charity, generosity, just ordinary kindness, things that we might associate with the mode of goodness, when they're displayed by a devotee, they're not. These are devotional activities. They're activities beyond the three modes of material nature. So we shouldn't mistake them for that. And the characteristic is that you find that these activities are executed in miraculous ways. And I think, in a sense, when just over the weekend we had this Sankirtan seminar by Vaisheshika Prabhu, and he was making the point in different ways, time and time again, that Sankirtan is a transcendental activity. What did he say? It's high sadhana. You know, so we might think, well, okay, I'm going and selling books door to door. The Jehovah's Witnesses do that, and, you know, guys selling stuff do that. when we lived in L.A., guys came around selling socks. You know? They were going door to door. They were selling socks, these big, you could buy. Are they the same? One activity, same, going to a door and knocking on it. Are they the same? No. Bhakti activities in bhakti are transcendent. They're beyond the modes of material nature. And therefore they have miraculous effects. So as I said, Vaish was describing so many miraculous effects, and I think everyone has so many wonderful stories in that regard. And Tom Harper's story about the judge in some little town in Alabama or Mississippi. My God, I wouldn't even go there. But they're miraculous because people are sudden, they're pulled out of the boat and they get a chance to engage in transcendental activity. And so there are miraculous things. And so there's a verse that also describes this. Mukam karochi vachalam pungam langai te girim yat kripatamaham bande shigurum dinataranam. If we are obedient students of our guru, we can act in transcendental ways. And this verse describes a couple of things which are quite miraculous. It says that Mukam karoti vachalam. We may be dumb, deaf, and blind, dumb and deaf, and still we can become a good lecturer. Mukam karoti vachalam. If we talk about Krishna, our words can have very potent effect. Classic example is Prabhupada talking about Malati Prabhu's daughter, Saraswati. She was 3 years old in India. They were traveling around so many places. And Malati would go up to people and say, do you know who Krishna is? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada considered her to be speaking perfectly. Even though she was a child, she was speaking very effective words. So it's miraculous. If one is deaf and dumb, still one can become an effective, good lecturer. And pungam lungai te garim, if one is lame, he can cross over mountains. If one is, it's very difficult for someone who has difficulty in walking to even think of crossing over mountains. But for one who's a devotee of the Lord, that can be done very easily. That can be done very easily. Now, we all know of someone who is sitting right over there, Srila Prabhupada, who personally exemplified these things, how mukam karoti vachalam pangam langayate garam yat kripatamaham bande shri gurum dinataranam. Srila Prabhupada exemplified this, and his activities, which were pure bhakti, show how this verse is not exaggeration. They show clearly how this verse is not exaggeration. Speaking ability. Prabhupada, he wrote in his prayer aboard the Jaladuta that he was praying to Krishna to please make my words understandable to them. Now we can understand that in a number of different ways, that he's going to be speaking philosophical discourses and, you know, help them understand the philosophical discourses, the philosophical points that have been made. But I think that there's more to it than just that. There are more practical things about it. I mean, he was coming from India, and they speak English in a way in which sometimes it's hard to catch, you know. I think some people may have had the experience when they listen to Prabhupada's tapes or something for the first time, is that they can't understand, what is it saying? Because of the accent. And so was Prabhupada also praying that, you know, hope, don't let my accent be an impediment to giving these people from a different place, speak with a different accent, give them the ability to understand what I'm saying. Yeah, of course, I'm not taking anything away from the transcendental nature of Srila Prabhupada, just trying to characterize him as some particular country or something. But still, I think that there's some practical aspect as well. But none of those were impediments. They weren't impediments. And when Prabhupada spoke, people understood, both philosophically, devotionally, and even practically, the words he was saying, and the miracle took place. As far as lame man crossing the mountains, in Vrindavan at Prabhupada Samadhi, our god brother Bhakti Siddhanta Prabhu he's done a relief sculpture, and he has he pictures Prabhupada walking, and the foot is sticking out. Has anybody seen this? Been to Vrindavan and seen this? You've seen how Prabhupada's foot is sticking out. He's making a strong stride with his foot, and his foot is sticking out. And people go there and they touch that foot as they circumambulate. Prabhupada confidently striding around the world. And practically speaking, a lame man, let's say a man with no money, a lame man or a man with no money crossed not mountains, but in this case, the ocean, which is equally as impassable. But even though he had no money, no means, you could say a lame man, he still was able to cross the ocean. How is it possible? How is it possible he was able to cross the ocean? And not only that, on the voyage, two heart attacks. He survived two heart attacks. He said if another one had come, he didn't know if he would survive. But he survived two heart attacks crossing the ocean. And you know what? What did Mrs. Pandya, the captain's wife, say at the end of the journey? Oh, Swamiji, we've never seen the Atlantic so calm. Who gave way? The ocean god gave way, gave him a smooth voyage. Because in the process of bhakti, there are no impediments. There are no impediments. So I didn't write it, but I copied something here that I'll read that concludes with that statement, that there will be no impediments. So bhakti, or cultivation of spiritual knowledge, is never subject by any material things, ahaitukiya pratiyata. No material thing can check us in our progress in Krishna consciousness. It is not possible. Never think like that. Simply follow the instructions of Krishna consciousness, manmana bhavamad bhakto majaji manvaskaru. Follow the rules and regulations and everything will be clear, very crystal clear. There will be no impediment. So, there will be no impediment. And Prabhupada, let's just list them a little bit to conclude here. Some of the things that Prabhupada overcame that are material impediments that sometimes prevent people from doing something. What are some of the impediments that he overcame? Ragamika?
His typewriter and the Bhagavad Gita manuscript was stolen.
Right. Yeah, how discouraging is that? You know, you're working on a manuscript and it was stolen, but it didn't deter him. It wasn't an impediment that stopped him, Tom Harper.
Old age and many, many health impediments besides the, I was hearing from Hari Sarai recently that I didn't realize, we always think Prabhupada was so strong and able to just eliminate all sorts of health impediments, diabetes, strokes, I mean, you know, it's like it's endless that age and he just continued.
Right. That's the amazing thing, yes. I mean, because we're getting to that age now ourselves, and we see how these things, you know, affect. But Prabhupada just, you know, no disease, old age, these things weren't impediments for him. He was like a young man. I think the classic example is him walking and the young man trying to keep up with him, you know, and getting out of breath. Yeah, that's that he crossed over as a better. Radha-damana. Right, he was not allowed by the government to have public meetings, but the seed is acknowledged by the devotees there today that Prabhupada made that Shanti. Yeah, he made him a devotee and he planted a seed and they're just going there, yeah. Any other impediments he overcame, yeah. He had no money, right? No money, but he was... Can you imagine, even today, getting on the plane and only having access to like $7 and going to India? I don't know if I would, you know, but yeah, no money was no impediment to him. He went. Yes,
Parashutra.
No manpower. He was alone. He was alone. My goodness. I did it. Wow, yeah. The first winter in America, the worst winter in years, and he had to face that. Wow. Yeah. Bruce?
Yeah, before Srila Prabhupada came to America, he would go to the home of Sumatra Maharaji in Juhu, and he would pass by his wonderful property. He was thinking that one day this will be a temple.
Of course, years later, after coming to America and then coming back to India, Srila Prabhupada purchased that property only to find out that that it had been sold twice before and that the person who sold it to him had no intention to give him possession. And it was years of litigation and court battles and dealings with this Surat personality before finally the property could be acquired and the title could be achieved. And at the end, Srila Prabhupada said, that was a good fight.
Yeah, that was a good fight. There are two books coming out about that. You know, one by Lokanath Swami, the other by Giriraj Maharaj. Lokanath Swami's book is going to be out by the 40th anniversary. Are you going over for that? Oh, okay. Yeah. Jagapush is there many years in Juhu, and they're having the 40th anniversary of that temple in January.
I remember Rishi who mentioned that in Australia, he had a dental ache and he went to the dentist. And then the dentist told Rishi that he cannot speak for 3 days at least, so no visitors. And then same afternoon, Prabhupada at 4 o'clock, he said, so who is coming? Oh, sorry, Prabhupada, we canceled. And Prabhupada was furious. And they were shocked that he didn't, even though according to dentists, he's supposed to experience severe pain in his toothache, but some or other Prabhupada did not even talk about it. And rather he got angry and he told Harishwari Prabhupada, I'd rather die in the battlefield of preaching than just all this excuse. And he was not very happy.
That reminds us of... that picture, I don't like to look at it personally, but when Prabhupada's translating in Vrindavan at the end, he's continuing to dictate his books. Jayadvaita Swami's with the recorder. Even death, approaching death didn't deter him, wasn't an impediment for him in writing his books and giving us his transcendental knowledge. Quite amazing. Madan, last one, and then we should end.
I was also thinking, it says when a spiritual master initiates a disciple, he takes the karma from his disciples. So, did any of his disciples have any karma to give to Prabhupada? That didn't stop him or slow him down either. Because there is a warning not to take too many disciples because it can overcome you.
Yeah, that's sobering responsibility on our part. Yeah, not to overburden. Not to place impediments, but to help remove impediments. So that's what the process of bhakti yoga helps us really, truly overcome the modes of material nature and also to achieve what we desire very most, and that is a loving relationship with Krishna. So that's available to us, so why be distracted by mystic siddhis? Vaisheshika, just fresh from this place, I can't ask for questions, but I can ask for reflections, because he asked for reflections. Ragat Mega. You want to give her a microphone? So.
Madan Mohan Prabhu mentioned the load of karma that Srila Prabhupada accepted from his disciples. I remember once Jai Pataka Swami said, when he initiates a whole village in Bengal or India, that's not even as much karma as initiating one Western devotee.
Any other sobering thoughts anybody would like to share with us? Janmastami?
I'd like to hear an analysis of there are many Vaishnavas that were stopped by impediments. But Srila Prabhupada had certain characteristics and qualities that enabled him to overcome them. But to hear that discussion, you know, what was it that made it possible for Prabhupada to do the impossible?
Well, that discussion should take place at some time, probably not right now.
Okay.
But there are examples of death. Even the death of a Vaishnava not being an impediment. So Vaishnavas in their service, they may meet death, but it's not the kind of death that's an impediment to their service, their continued service, to their continued existence as death in the material world. And so even death is not an impediment for the pure devotee of the Lord.
Can I offer reflection?
Yes.
It was that my sense is that it was because of Prabhupada's Divyashyatmika Buddhi, you know, his complete focus on giving everything to fulfill the order of the spiritual master, and that enabled him to go through impossible situations and emerge with amazing results.
Very good, Jagannath.
So I'd like to suggest that the impediments that we see
more that the demons who came to Vrindavan to try and kill Krishna were impediments to Krishna. They actually were there to glorify Krishna, to create a backdrop where Krishna becomes, you know, so lovable and so adorable and so, you know, the source of all shelter. And so when the pure devotee is up against what appears to us as impediments and would be to us as impediments, they are there to glorify the pure devotee. They are there to serve the pure devotee. And the pure devotee relishes that interaction with what appears to be impediments, but he's so absorbed, he or she, they're so absorbed in their service, that they see that this, these are all, you know, wonderful gifts from Krishna.
Now, this is a place to stop, not with the Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you.